Blind Sight, Disc 10.
Graduation came 9 days early. We didn't see the shot. Whatever gunport Rorschach had opened was precisely eclipsed on three fronts. The lab hab hit it from Theseus, and two gnarled excrusions of the artifact itself hit it from each of the gun emplacements. A bolus of incendiary plasma shot from that blind spot like a thrown punch. It had split the inflatable wide open before the first alarm went up. Alarms chased us aft. We launched ourselves down the spine through the bridge, through the crypt, past hatches and crawl spaces, fleeing the surface for any refuge with more than a hand's breadth between skin and sky, burrowing. Consensus followed us back, its windows warping and sliding across struts and conduits in the concave tunnel of the spine itself. I paid no attention until we were back in the drum, deep in Theseus's belly, where we could pretend we were safer. Down on the turning deck, Bates erupted from the head, tactical windows swirling like ballroom dancers around her. Our own window came to rest on the common's bulkhead. The hab expanded across that display like a cheap optical illusion, both swelling and shrinking in our sights, that smooth surface billowing toward us while collapsing in on itself. It took me a moment to reconcile the contradiction. Something had kicked the hab hard from its far side, sent it careening toward us in a slow, majestic tumble. Something had opened the hab, spilled its atmosphere, and left its elastic skin drawing in on itself like a deflating balloon. The impact site swung into view as we watched, a scorched, flaccid mouth trailing tenuous wisps of frozen spittle. Our guns were firing. They shot non-conducting slugs that would not be turned aside by electromagnetic trickery, invisibly dark and distant to human eyes, but I saw them through the tactical crosshairs of the firing robots, watched them sew twin-dotted black-bodied arcs across the heavens. The streams converged as the guns tracked their targets, closed on two attenuate throwing stars fleeing spread-eagled through the void, their faces turned to Rorschach like flowers to the sun. The guns cut them to pieces before they'd even made it halfway. But those shredded pieces kept falling, and suddenly the ground beneath was alive with motion. I zoomed the view. Scramblers surged across Rorschach's hull like an orgy of snakes, naked to space. Some linked arms, one to another, built squirming vertebral daisy chains anchored at one end. They lifted from the hull, waved through the radioactive vacuum like fronds of articulated kelp, reaching, grasping. Neither Bates nor her machines were stupid. They targeted the interlinked scramblers as ruthlessly as they'd gone after the escapees, and with a much higher total score. But there were simply too many targets, too many fragments snatched in passing. Twice I saw dismembered bits of stretch and clench caught by their brethren. The ruptured hab loomed across consensus like a great torn leucocyte. Another alarm buzzed somewhere nearby, proximity alert. Cunningham shot into the drum from somewhere astern, bounced off a cluster of pipes and conduits, grabbed for support.
Holy shit, we are leaving, aren't we? Amanda?
No, Saresti answered from everywhere. What does it fucking take? I caught myself. Amanda, what if it fires on the ship?
It won't. She didn't take her eyes from her windows.
How do you...
It can't.
If it had spring-loaded any more firepower, we'd have seen a change in thermo and microallometry.
A false-color landscape rotated between us, its latitudes measured in time, its longitudes in delta mass. Kilotons rose from that terrain like a range of red mountains.
Huh, came in just under the noise limit.
Saresti cut her off. Robert, Susan, EVA.
James blanched.
What?
Cunningham cried.
Lab modules about to impact, the vampire said. Salvage the samples now.
He killed the channel before anyone could argue. But Cunningham wasn't about to argue. He'd just seen our death sentence commuted. Why would Saresti care about retrieving biopsy samples if he didn't think we stood a chance of escaping with them?
The biologist steadied himself, raced toward the forward hatch.
I'm there, he said, shooting into the bow.
I had to admit it. Saresti's psychology was getting better. He wasn't working on James, though, or Michelle, or... I couldn't quite tell who was on top.
I can't go out there, Siri. It's... I can't go out there, Just observe. Don't interfere.
The ruptured inflatable collided impotently to starboard and flattened itself against the carapace. We felt nothing. Far away and far too near, the legions thinned across Rorschach's surface. They disappeared through mouths that puckered and dilated and magically closed again in the artifact's hull. The emplacements fired passionlessly at those who remained. Observe. The gang of four strobed at my side, scared to death. Don't interfere.
It's okay, I said. I'll go.
The open airlock was like a dimple in the face of an endless cliff. I looked out from that indentation into the abyss. This side of Theseus faced away from Big Ben, away from the enemy. The view was still unsettling enough. An endless panorama of distant stars, hard and cold and unwinking. A single, marginally brighter one, shining yellow, still so very far away. Any scant comfort I might have taken from that sight was lost when the sun went out for the briefest instant. A tumbling piece of rock, perhaps? One of Rorschach's shovel-nosed entourage. One step, and I might never stop falling. But I didn't step, and I didn't fall. I squeezed my pistol, jetted gently through the opening, turned. Theseus's carapace curved away from me in all directions. Toward the prow, the sealed observation blister rose above the horizon like a gunmetal sunrise. Farther aft, a tattered snowdrift peeked across the hull, the edge of the broken lab hab. And past it all, close enough to touch, the endless dark cloudscape of Big Ben, a great roiling wall extending to some flat, distant horizon I could barely grasp even in theory. When I focused, it was dark and endless shades of gray, but dim, sullen redness teased the corner of my eye when I looked away. Robert, I brought Cunningham's suit feed to my HUD, a craggy, motionless ice field thrown into high contrast by the light of his helmet. Interference from Rorschach's magnetosphere washed over the image in waves. You there? Pops and crackles, the sound of breath and mumbling against an electrical hum. 4.3, 4.0, 3.8. Robert? 3. Shit. What are you doing out here, Keaton? Where's the gang? I came instead. Another squeeze of the trigger and I was coasting toward the snowscape. Theseus's convex hull rolled past, just within reach. To give you a hand. Let's move it then, shall we? He was passing through a crevice, a scorched and jagged tear in the fabric that folded back at his touch. Struts, broken panels, dead robot arms tangled through the interior of the ice cave like glacial debris. Their outlines writhed with static, their shadows leaped and stretched like living things in the sweep of his headlight. I'm almost... Something that wasn't static moved in his headlight. Something uncoiled just at the edge of the camera's view. The feed died. Suddenly Bates and Saresti were shouting in my helmet. I tried to break. My stupid, useless legs kicked against vacuum, obeying some ancient brainstem override from a time when all monsters were earthbound. But by the time I remembered to use my trigger finger, the lab hab was already looming before me. Rorschach reared up behind it in the near distance, vast and malign. Dim green auroras writhed across its twisted surface like sheet lightning. Mouths opened and closed by the hundreds, viscous as bubbling volcanic mud, any one of them large enough to swallow Theseus whole. I barely noticed the flicker of motion just ahead of me, the silent eruption of dark mass from the collapsed inflatable. By the time Cunningham caught my eye, he was already on his way, backlit against the ghastly corpse light flickering on Rorschach's skin. I thought I saw him waving, but I was wrong. It was only the scrambler wrapped around his body like a desperate lover, moving his arm back and forth while it ran the thrust pistol tethered to his wrist. Bye-bye, that arm seemed to say, and fuck you, Keaton. I watched for what seemed like forever, but no other part of him moved at all.
voices shouting, ordering me back inside. I hardly heard them. I was too dumbfounded by the basic math, trying to make sense of the simplest subtraction. Two scramblers, stretch and clench, both accounted for, shot to pieces before my eyes. "Keaton, do you read? Get back here. Acknowledge." It can't be," I heard myself say. "There were only two. Return to the ship immediately. Acknowledge. Acknowledged." Rorschach's mouth snapped shut at once, as though holding a deep breath. The artifact began to turn, ponderously, a continent changing course. It receded, slowly at first, picking up speed, turning tail and running. "How odd," I thought. "Maybe it's more afraid than we are." But then Rorschach blew us a kiss. I saw it burst from deep within the forest, ethereal and incandescent. It shot across the heavens and splashed against the small of Theseus's back, making a complete and utter fool of Amanda Bates. The skin of our ship flowed there and opened like a mouth and congealed in a soundless frozen scream. You cannot prevent and prepare for war at the same time. Albert Einstein. I have no idea whether the scrambler made it back home with its hard-won prize. There was so much lost distance to make up, even if the emplacements didn't pick it off en route. Cunningham's pistol might have run out of fuel, and who knew how long those creatures could survive in vacuum anyway. Maybe there'd been no real hope of success. Maybe that scrambler was dead from the moment it had gambled on staying behind. I never found out. It had dwindled and vanished from my sight long before Rorschach dove beneath the clouds and disappeared in turn. There had always been three, of course. Stretch and Clench, and the half-forgotten microwaved remains of a scrambler killed by an uppity grunt, kept on ice next to its living brethren, within easy reach of Cunningham's teleops. I tried to dredge half-glimpsed details from memory after the fact. Had both of those escapees been spheres, or had one been flattened along one axis? Had they thrashed, waved their limbs the way some panicky human might with no ground beneath them? Or had one, perhaps, coasted lifeless and ballistic until our guns destroyed the evidence? At this point, it didn't really matter. What mattered was that at long last everyone was on the same page. Blood had been drawn. War declared. And Theseus was paralyzed from the waist down. Rorschach's parting shot had punched through the carapace at the base of the spine. It had just missed the ram scoop and the telematter assembly. It might have taken out Fab if it hadn't spent so many joules burning through the carapace, but barring some temporary pulse effects, it left all critical systems pretty much operational. All it had done was weaken Theseus's backbone enough to make it snap in two should we ever burn hard enough to break orbit. The ship would be able to repair that damage, but not in time. If it had been luck, it would have been remarkable. And now, its quarry disabled, Rorschach had vanished. It had everything it needed from us, for the moment at least. It had information, all the experiences and insights encoded in the salvaged limbs of its martyred spies. If Stretch or Clench's gamble had paid off, it even had a specimen of its own now, which all things considered we could hardly begrudge it. And so now it lurked invisibly in the depths, resting, perhaps, recharging. But it would be back. Theseus lost weight for the final round. We shut down the drum in a token attempt to reduce our vulnerable allotment of moving parts. The gang of four, uncommanded, unneeded, the very reason for their existence ripped away, retreated into some inner dialogue to which other flesh was unwelcome. She floated in the observatory, her eyes closed as tightly as the leaded lids around her. I could not tell who was in control. I guessed. "Michelle? Siri. Susan. Just go." Bates floated near the floor of the drum, windows arrayed externally across bulkhead and conference table. What can I do? I asked. She didn't look up. Nothing. So I watched. Bates counted skimmers in one window, mass, inertia, any of a dozen variables that would prove far too constant should any one of those shovel-nosed missiles come at our throat. They had finally noticed us. Their chaotic electron dance was shifting now, hundreds of thousands of colossal sledgehammers in sudden flux, reweaving into some ominous dynamic that hadn't yet settled into anything we could predict. In another window, Rorschach's vanishing act replayed on endless loop, a radar image receding deep into the maelstrom, fading beneath gaseous teratons of radio static. It might even be an orbit of sorts. Judging by that last glimpsed trajectory, Rorschach might well be swinging around Ben's core now, passing through crushed layers of methane and monoxide that would flatten Theseus into smoke. Maybe it didn't even stop there. Maybe Rorschach could pass unharmed even through those vaster, deeper pressures that made iron and hydrogen run liquid. We didn't know. We only knew that it would be back in a little under 2 hours, assuming it maintained its trajectory and survived the depths. And of course it would survive. You can't kill the thing under the bed. You can only keep it outside the covers, and only for a while. A thumbnail inset caught my eye with a flash of color. At my command, it grew into a swirling soap bubble, incongruously beautiful, a blue-shifted coruscating rainbow of blown glass. I didn't recognize it for a moment. Big Ben, rendered in some prismatic false color enhance I'd never seen before. I grunted softly. Bates glanced up. Oh, beautiful, isn't it? What's the spectrum? Longwave stuff. Visible red infra down a ways. Good for heat traces. Visible red? There wasn't any to speak of. Mostly cool plasma fractals in 100 shades of jade and sapphire. Quadrachromatic palette, Bates told me. Like what a cat might see. Or a vampire. She managed a half-hearted wave at the rainbow bubble. Saresti sees something like this every time he looks outside, if he ever looks outside. You'd think he'd have mentioned it, I murmured. It was gorgeous, a holographic ornament. Perhaps even Rorschach might be a work of art through eyes like these. I don't think they parse sight like we do. Bates opened another window. Mundane graphs and contour plots sprang from the table. They don't even go to heaven, from what I hear. VR doesn't work on them. They see the pixels or something. What if he's right? I asked. I told myself that I was only looking for a tactical assessment, an official opinion for the official record, but my words came out doubtful and frightened. She paused. For a moment, I wondered if she, too, had finally lost patience with the sight of me. But she only looked up and stared off into some enclosed distance. What if he's right? She repeated and pondered the question that lay beneath. What can we do? We could engineer ourselves back into non-sentience, perhaps? Might improve our odds in the long run? She looked at me, a rueful sort of half-smile at the corner of her mouth. But I guess that wouldn't be much of a win, would it? What's the difference between being dead and just not knowing you're alive? I finally saw it. How long would it take an enemy tactician to discern Bates's mind behind the actions of her troops on the battlefield? How long before the obvious logic became clear? In any combat situation, this woman would naturally draw the greatest amount of enemy fire, take off the head, kill the body. But Amanda Bates wasn't just a head, she was a bottleneck. And her body would not suffer from a decapitation strike. Her death would only let her troops off the leash. How much more deadly would those grunts be once every battlefield reflex didn't have to pass through some interminable job stack waiting for the rubber stamp? Spindle had had it all wrong. Amanda Bates wasn't a sop to politics. Her role didn't deny the obsolescence of human oversight at all. Her role depended on it. She was more cannon fodder than I. She always had been. And I had to admit, After generations of generals who'd lived for the glory of the mushroom cloud, it was a pretty effective strategy for souring warmongers on gratuitous violence. In Amanda Bates's army, picking a fight meant standing on the battlefield with a bullseye on your chest. No wonder she'd been so invested in peaceful alternatives. "I'm sorry," I said softly. She shrugged. "It's not over yet. Just the first round." She took a long, deep breath and turned back to her study of slingshot mechanics. "Rorschach wouldn't have tried so hard to scare us off in the first place if we couldn't touch it, right?" I swallowed. "Right. So there's still a chance," she nodded to herself. "There's still a chance." The demon arranged his pieces for the end game. He didn't have many left. The soldier he placed in the bridge. He packed obsolete linguists and diplomats back in their coffin, out of sight and out of the way. He called the Jargonaut to his quarters, and although it would be the first time I'd seen him since the attack, his summons carried not the slightest trace of doubt that I would obey. I did. I came on command and saw that he had surrounded himself with faces. Every last one of them was screaming. There was no sound. The disembodied holograms floated in silent tears around the bubble, each contorted into a different expression of pain. They were being tortured, these faces. Half a dozen real ethnicities and twice as many hypothetical ones, skin tones ranging from charcoal to albino, brows high and slanted, noses splayed or pointed, jaws receding or prognathous. Saristi had called the entire hominid tree into existence around him, astonishing in their range of features, terrifying in their consistency of expression. A sea of tortured faces rotating in slow orbits around my vampire commander. "My God, what is this?" "Statistics." Saristi seemed focused on a flayed Asian child. "Rorschach's growth allometry over a 2-week period." "Their faces." He nodded, turning his attention to a woman with no eyes. "Skull diameter scales to total mass. Mandible length scales to EM transparency at 1 angstrom. 113 facial dimensions, each presenting a different variable. Principal component combinations present as multi-feature aspect ratios." He turned to face me, his naked gleaming eyes just slightly sidecast. "You'd be surprised how much gray matter is dedicated to the analysis of facial imagery. Shame to waste it on anything as counterintuitive as residual plots or contingency tables." I felt my jaw clenching. "And the expressions? What do they represent?" "Software customizes output for user." An agonized gallery pled for mercy on all sides. "I am wired for hunting," he reminded gently. "And you think I don't know that?" I said after a moment. He shrugged, disconcertingly human. "You ask?" "Why am I here, Yuka? You want to teach me another object lesson?" "To discuss our next move." "What move? We can't even run away." "No." He shook his head, baring filed teeth in something approaching regret. "Why did we wait so long?" Suddenly my sullen defiance had evaporated. I sounded like a child, frightened and pleading. "Why didn't we just take it on when we first got here, when it was weaker?"
"We need to learn things. For next time."
"Next time? I thought Rorschach was a dandelion seed. I thought it just washed up here."
"By chance, but every dandelion is a clone. Their seeds are legion."
Another smile, not remotely convincing.
"And maybe it takes more than one try for the placental mammals to conquer Australia."
"It'll annihilate us. It doesn't even need those spitballs. It could pulverize us with one of those scramjets in an instant."
"It doesn't want to."
"How do you know?"
"They need to learn things too. They want us intact.
improves our odds. Not enough. We can't win. This was his cue. This was the point at which Uncle Predator would smile at my naivete and take me into his confidence. Of course we're armed to the teeth, he would say. Do you think we'd come all this way, face such a vast unknown, without the means to defend ourselves? Now, at last, I can reveal that shielding and weaponry account for over half the ship's mass. It was his cue. No, he said. We can't win. So we just sit here? We just wait to die for the next 68 minutes? Sarasti shook his head. No. But, I began. Oh, I finished. Because, of course, we had just topped up our antimatter reserves. Theseus was not equipped with weapons. Theseus was the weapon. And we were, in fact, going to sit here for the next 68 minutes, waiting to die. But we were going to take Rorschach with us when we did. Sarasti said nothing. I wondered what he saw looking at me. I wondered if there actually was a Yuka Sarasti behind those eyes to see, if his insights, always 10 steps ahead of our own, hailed not so much from superior analytical facilities as from the time-worn truth that it takes one to know one. Whose side, I wondered, would an automaton take? You have other things to worry about, he said. He moved toward me. I swear all those agonized faces followed him with their eyes. He studied me for a moment, the flesh crinkling around his eyes, or maybe some mindless algorithm merely processed visual input, correlated aspect ratios and facial tics, fed everything to some output subroutine with no more awareness than a stats program. Maybe there was no more spark in this creature's face than there was in all the others silently screaming in his wake. Is Susan afraid of you? The thing before me asked. Why should she be? She has 4 conscious entities in her head. She's 4 times more sentient than you. Doesn't that make you a threat? No, of course not. Then why should you feel threatened by me? And suddenly I didn't care anymore. I laughed out loud with minutes to live and nothing to lose. Why? Maybe because you're my natural enemy, you fucker. Maybe because I know you, and you can't even look at one of us without flexing your claws. Maybe because you nearly ripped my fucking hand off and raped me for no good reason. I can imagine what it's like, he said quietly. Please don't make me do it again. I fell instantly silent. I know your race and mine are never on the best of terms. There was a cold smile in his voice, if not on his face. But I do know only what you force me to. You rationalize, Keaton. You defend. You reject unpalatable truths, and if you can't reject them outright, you trivialize them. Incremental evidence is never enough for you. You hear rumors of Holocaust, you dismiss them. You see evidence of genocide, you insist it can't be so bad. Temperatures rise, glaciers melt, species die, and you blame sunspots and volcanoes. Everyone is like this, but you most of all. You and your Chinese room. You turn incomprehension into mathematics. You reject the truth without even hearing it first. It served me well enough. I wondered at the ease with which I had put my life into the past tense. Yes, if your purpose is only to transmit, now you have to convince, you have to believe. There were implications there I didn't dare to hope for. Are you saying, can't afford to let the truth trickle through? Can't give you the chance to shore up your rationales and your defenses. They must fall completely. You must be inundated, shattered, genocides impossible to deny when you're buried up to your neck in dismembered bodies.
You played me, I whispered, all this time.
I'd known something was going on. I just hadn't understood what. I'd have seen right through it, I told him, if you hadn't made me get involved.
You might even read it off me directly.
That's why you... I shook my head. I thought that was because we were meat.
That, too,
Saresti admitted and looked right at me. For the first time, I looked right back and felt a shock of recognition. I still wonder why I never saw it before. For all those years, I remembered the thoughts and feelings of some different younger person, some remnant of the boy my parents had hacked out of my head to make room for me. He'd been alive. His world had been vibrant. And though I could call up the memories of that other consciousness, I could barely feel anything within the constraints of my own. Perhaps dream state wasn't such a bad word for it.
Like to hear a vampire folktale? Saresti asked me.
Vampires have folktales. He took it for a yes.
A laser is assigned to find the darkness. Since it lives in a room without doors or windows or any other source of light, it thinks this will be easy. But everywhere it turns, it sees brightness. Every wall, every piece of furniture it points at is brightly lit. Eventually it concludes there is no darkness, that light is everywhere.
What the hell are you talking about?
Amanda is not planning a mutiny.
What?
You know about... She doesn't even want to. Ask her if you like.
No,
You value objectivity.
It was so obvious I didn't bother answering. He nodded as if I had.
Synthesists can't have opinions of their own. So when you feel one, it must be someone else's. The crew holds you in contempt. Amanda wants me relieved of command. Half of us is you. I think the word is project. Although,
he cocked his head a bit to one side,
lately you improve. Come.
Where?
Shuttle bay. Time to do your job.
My
survive and bear witness.
A drone can deliver the data, assuming nothing fries its memory before it gets away.
It can't convince anyone. It can't counter rationalizations and denials. It can't matter. And vampires, he paused, have poor communications skills.
It should have been a cause for petty, selfish rejoicing. It all comes down to me, I said. That's what you're saying. I'm a fucking stenographer, and it's all on me.
Yes. Forgive me for that.
Forgive you?
Saresti waved his hand. All faces save two disappeared. I don't know what I'm doing.
The news bloomed across consensus a few seconds before Bates called it aloud. 13 skimmers had not reappeared from behind Big Ben on schedule. 16, 28, and counting. Saresti clicked to himself as he and Bates played catch-up. Tactical filled with luminous multicolored threads, a tangle of revised projections as intricate as art. The threads wrapped Ben like a filamentous cocoon. Theseus was a naked speck in the middle distance. I expected any number of those lines to skewer us like needles through a bug. Surprisingly, none did.
but the projections only extended 25 hours into the future and were reliable for only half that. Not even Saresti and the captain could look so far ahead with that many balls in the air. It was something, though, the faintest silver lining, that all these high-speed behemoths couldn't simply reach out and swat us without warning. Evidently, they still had to ease into the curve. After Rorschach's dive, I'd been starting to think the laws of physics didn't apply. The trajectories were close enough, though. At least three skimmers would be passing within 100 kilometers on their next orbits. Saresti reached for his injector, the blood rising in his face.
"Time to go. We refit Charybdis while you're sulking."
He held the hypo to his throat and shot up. I stared at Consensus, caught by that bright shifting web like a moth by a streetlight.
"Now, Siri."
He pushed me from his quarters. I sailed into the passageway, grabbed a convenient rung, and stopped. The spine was alive with grunts, patrolling the airspace, standing guard over the fab plants and shuttle locks, clinging like giant insects to the rungs of unrolling spinal ladders. Slowly, silently, the spine itself was stretching. It could do that, I remembered. Its corrugations flexed and relaxed like muscle. It could grow up to 200 meters to accommodate any late-breaking need for a bigger hangar or more lab space. Or more infantry. Theseus was increasing the size of the battlefield.
"Come."
The vampire turned aft. Bates broke in from up front. "Something's happening." An emergency hand pad geckoed to the expanding bulkhead slid past to one side. Saresti grabbed it and tapped commands. Bates's feed appeared on the bulkhead. A tiny chunk of Big Ben, an EM-enhanced equatorial quadrant only a few thousand clicks on a side. The clouds boiled down there, a cyclonic knot of turbulence swirling almost too fast for real time. The overlay described charged particles bound in a deep Parker spiral. It spoke of a great mass, rising. Saresti clicked.
"DTI?" Bates said.
"Optical only." Saresti took my arm and dragged me effortlessly astern. The display paced us along the bulkhead. Seven skimmers shot from the clouds as I watched, a ragged circle of scramjets screaming red-hot into space. Consensus plotted their paths in an instant. Luminous arcs rose around our ship like the bars of a cage. Theseus shuddered. "We've been hit," I thought. Suddenly the spine's plodding expansion cranked into overdrive. The pleated wall lurched and accelerated, streaming past my outstretched fingers as the closed hatch receded up ahead, receded overhead. The walls weren't moving at all. We were falling to the sudden strident bleeding of an alarm. Something nearly yanked my arm from its socket. Saresti had reached out with one hand and caught a rung, reached with his other and caught me before we'd both been flattened against the fab plant. We dangled. I must have weighed 200 kilograms. The floor shuddered 10 meters below my feet. The ship groaned around us, the spine filled with the screech of torquing metal. Bates's grunts clung to the walls with clawed feet. I reached for the ladder pulled away. The ship was bending in the middle, and down had started to climb the walls. Saresti and I swung toward the center of the spine like a daisy chain pendulum.
"Bates! James!" the vampire roared.
His grip on my wrist trembled, slipping. I strained for the ladder, swung, caught it.
"Susan James has barricaded herself in the bridge and shut down autonomic overrides." An unfamiliar voice, flat and affectless. "She has initiated an unauthorized burn."
"I have begun a controlled reactor shutdown. Be advised that the main drive will be offline for at least 27 minutes. The ship, I realized, its voice raised calmly above the alarm, the captain itself, on public address. That was unusual.
"Bridge," Saresti barked. "Open channel."
Someone was shouting up there. There were words, but I couldn't make them out. Without warning, Saresti let go. He dropped obliquely in a blur. Aft and opposite, the bulkhead waited to swat him like an insect. In half a second, both his legs would be shattered if the impact didn't kill him outright. But suddenly we were weightless again, and Eukasaristi, purple-faced, stiff-limbed, was foaming at the mouth. "Reactor offline," the captain reported. Saristi bounced off the wall. "He's having a seizure," I realized. I released the ladder and pushed astern. Theseus swung lopsidedly around me. Saristi convulsed in midair. Clicks and hisses and choking sounds stuttered from his mouth. His eyes were so wide they seemed lidless. His pupils were mirror-red pinpoints. The flesh twitched across his face as though trying to crawl off. Ahead and behind, battlebots held their positions and ignored us. "Bates!" I yelled up the spine. "We need help!" Angles everywhere. Seams on the shield plates. Sharp shadows and protrusions on the surface of every drone. A 2x3 matrix of insets, bordered in black, floating over the main consensus display. Two big interlinked crosses right in front of where Saristi had been hanging. "This can't be happening. He just took his anti-Euclideans. I saw him, unless..." Someone had spiked Saristi's drugs. "Bates!" She should be linked into the grunts. They should have leapt forward at the first sign of trouble. They should be dragging my commander to the infirmary by now. They waited stolid and immobile. I stared at the nearest. "Bates, you there?" And then, in case she wasn't, I spoke to the grunt directly. "Are you autonomous? Do you take verbal orders?" On all sides, the robots watched. The captain just laughed at me, its voice posing as an alarm. "Infirmary." I pushed. Saristi's arms flailed randomly against my head and shoulders. He tumbled forward and sideways, hit the moving consensus display dead center, bounced away up the spine. I kicked off in his wake, and glimpsed something from the corner of my eye, and turned, and dead center of consensus, Rorschach erupted from Ben's seething face like a breaching whale. It wasn't just the EM enhance, the thing was glowing, deep angry red. Enraged, it hurled itself into space, big as a mountain range. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Theseus lurched. The lights flickered, went out, came back on again. The turning bulkhead cuffed me from behind. "Backups engaged," the captain said calmly. "Captain, Saristi's down." I kicked off the nearest ladder, bumped into a grunt, and headed forward after the vampire. "Bates isn't... What do I do?" "Nav offline. Starboard afferents offline." It wasn't even talking to me, I realized. Maybe this wasn't the captain at all. Maybe it was pure reflex, a dialogue tree spouting public service announcements. Maybe Theseus had already been lobotomized. Maybe this was only her brain stem talking. Darkness again, then flickering light. If the captain was gone, we were screwed. I gave Saristi another push. The alarm bleated on. The drum was 20 meters ahead. Biomed was just the other side of that closed hatch. The hatch had been open before, I remembered. Someone had shut it in the last few minutes. Fortunately, Theseus had no locks on her doors. Unless the gang barricaded it before they took the bridge. "Strap in, people, we are getting out of here." "Who in hell?" "The open bridge channel. Susan James shouting up there, or someone was, I couldn't quite place the voice. 10 meters to the drum." Theseus jerked again, slowed her spin, stabilized. "Somebody start the goddamn reactor. I've only got attitude jets up here. Susan! Sasha!"
I was at the hatch. "Who is that?"
I pushed past Saristi and reached to open it. No answer. Not from consensus, anyway. I heard a muted hum from behind, saw the ominous shifting of shadows on the bulkhead just a moment too late. I turned in time to see one of the grunts raise a spiky appendage, curved like a scimitar, needle-tipped, over Saristi's head. I turned in time to see it plunge into his skull. I froze. The metal proboscis withdrew, dark and slick. Lateral maxillipeds began nibbling at the base of Saristi's skull. His pithed corpse wasn't thrashing now. It only trembled, a sack of muscles and motor nerves awash in static. Bates. Her mutiny was underway. No, their mutiny. Bates and the gang. I'd known. I'd imagined it. I'd seen it coming. He hadn't believed me. The lights went out again. The alarm fell silent. Consensus dwindled to a flickering doodle on the bulkhead and disappeared. I saw something there in that last instant and refused to process it. I heard breath catch in my throat, felt angular monstrosities advancing through the darkness. Something flared directly ahead, a brief bright staccato in the void. I glimpsed curves and angles and silhouette, staggering. The buzzing crackle of shorting circuitry, metal objects collided nearby, unseen. From behind the crinkle of the drum hatch, opening, I turned. A sudden beam of harsh chemical light hit me and lit the mechanical ranks behind. They simultaneously unclamped from their anchorages and floated free. Their joints clicked in unison like an army stamping to attention. Keaton, Bates snapped, sailing through the hatch. You okay? The chem light shone from her forehead. It turned the interior of the spine into a high-contrast mosaic, all pale surfaces and sharp moving shadows. It spilled across the grunt that had killed Saresti. The robot bounced down the spine, suddenly, mysteriously inert. The light washed across Saresti's body. The corpse turned slowly on its axis. Spherical crimson beads emerged from its head like drops of water from a leaky faucet. They spread in a winding, widening trail, spotlit by Bates's headlamp, a spiral arm of dark ruby suns. I backed away. You... She pushed me to one side. Stay clear of the hatch unless you're going through. Her eyes were fixed on the ranked drones. Optical line of sight. Rows of glassy eyes reflected back at us down the passageway, passing in and out of shadow. You killed Saresti. No. But who do you think shut it down, Keaton? The fucker went rogue. I could barely even get it to self-destruct. Her eyes went briefly deep focus. All down the spine, the surviving drones launched into some intricate martial ballet, half seen in the shifting cone of her headlamp. Better, Bates said. They should stay in line now, assuming we don't get hit with anything too much stronger. What is hitting us? Lightning. EMP. Drones sailed down to Fab and the shuttles, taking strategic positions along the tube. Rorschach's putting out one hell of a charge, and every time one of those skimmers passes by us, they arc. What, at this range? I thought we were... The burn sent us in the wrong direction. We're inbound. Three grunts floated close enough to touch. They drew beads on the open drum hatch. She said she was trying to escape, I remembered. She fucked up. Not by that much. She couldn't have. We were all rated for manual piloting, just in case. Not the gang, Bates said. But I think there's someone new in there now. Bunch of submodules wired together and woke up somehow. I don't know. But whatever's in charge, I think it's just panicking. Stuttering brightness on all sides, the spinal light strips flickered and finally held steady at half their usual brightness. Theseus coughed static and spoke. Consensus is offline. React. The voice faded. Consensus, I remembered as Bates turned to head back upstream. I saw something, I said, before consensus went out.
Yeah.
Was that? She paused at the hatch.
Yeah.
I'd seen scramblers, hundreds of them, sailing naked through the void, their arms spread wide. Some of their arms, anyway. They were carrying, Bates nodded, weapons. Her eyes flickered to some unseen distance for a moment. First wave headed for the front end, blister and forward lock, I think. Second wave's aft. She shook her head. Huh, I would have done it the other way around. How far?
Far?
Bates smiled faintly. They're already on the hull, Siri. We're engaging. What do I do? What do I do? Her eyes stared past me and widened. She opened her mouth. A hand clamped on my shoulder from behind and spun me around. Saresti. His dead eyes stared from a skull split like a spiked melon. Globules of coagulating blood clung to his hair and skin like engorged ticks. Go with him, Bate said. Saresti grunted and clicked. There were no words. What? I began. Now, that's an order. Bates turned back to the hatch. We'll cover you. The shuttle. You too?
No.
Why not? They can fight better without you. You said that yourself. What's the point?
Can't leave yourself a back door, Keaton. Defeats the whole purpose.
She allowed herself a small, sad smile. They've breached. Go. She was gone, fresh alarms rising in her wake. Far toward the bow, I heard the crinkle of emergency bulkheads snapping shut. Saresti's undead carcass gurgled and pushed me down the spine. Four more grunts slid smoothly past and took up position behind us. I looked over my shoulder in time to see the vampire pull the hand pad from the wall. But it wasn't Saresti at all, of course. It was the captain, whatever was left of the captain this far into the fight, commandeering a peripheral interface for its own use. The optical port spouted conspicuously from the back of Saresti's neck, where the cable used to go in. I remembered the drones, maxillipeds, chewing. The sound of weapons fire and ricochets rose behind us. The corpse typed one-handed as we moved. I wondered briefly why it just didn't talk before my gaze flickered back to the spike in his brain. Saresti's speech centers must be mush. Why did you kill him? I said. A whole new alarm started up way back in the drum. A sudden breeze tugged me backward for a moment, dissipated in the next second with a distant clang. The corpse held out the hand pad, configured for keys and a text display. Seizing. Couldn't control. We were at the shuttle locks. Robot soldiers let us pass, their attention elsewhere. You go, the captain said. Someone screamed in the distance. Way off up the spine, the drum hatch slammed shut. I turned and saw a pair of distant grunts welding the seal. They seemed to move faster now than they ever had before. Maybe it was only my imagination. The starboard shuttle lock slid back. Charybdis's interior lights winked on, spilling brightness into the passageway. The spine's emergency lighting seemed even dimmer in contrast. I peered through the opening. There was almost no cabin space left, just a single open coffin jammed between coolant and fuel tanks and massive retrofitted shock pads. Charybdis had been refitted for high G and long distance. And me. Saresti's corpse urged me on from behind. I turned and faced it. Was it ever him? I asked. Go. Tell me, did he ever speak for himself? Did he ever decide anything on his own? Were we ever following his orders, or was it just you all along? Saresti's undead eyes stared glassy and uncomprehending. His fingers jerked on the hand pad. You dislike orders from machines. Happier this way. I let it strap me in and close the lid. I lay there in the dark, feeling my body lurch and sway as the shuttle slid into its launch slot. I withstood the sudden silence as the docking clamps let go, the jerk of acceleration that spat me hard into the vacuum, the ongoing thrust that pushed against my chest like a soft mountain. Around me, the shuttle trembled in the throes of a burn that far exceeded its normative specs. My inlays came back online. Suddenly I could see outside if I wanted. I could see what was happening behind me. I chose not to, deliberately and fervently, and looked away. Theseus was dwindling by then, even on tactical. She listed down the well, wobbling toward some enemy rendezvous that must have been intentional, some last-second maneuver to get her payload as close to target as possible. Rorschach rose to meet her, its gnarled, spiky arms uncoiling, spreading as if in anticipation of an embrace. but it was the backdrop, not the players, that stole the tableau. The face of Big Ben roiling in my rear view, a seething cyclonic backdrop filling the window. Magnetic contours wound spring tight on the overlay. Rorschach was drawing all of Ben's magnetosphere around itself like a bright swirling cloak, twisting it into a concentrated knot that grew and brightened and bulged outward. Like a torsion flare from an L-class dwarf, my commander had said once. But we should see anything big enough to generate that effect, and the sky's dark on that bearing.
IAU
calls it a statistical artifact. As, in fact, it had been. An impact splash, perhaps, or the bright brief bellow of some great energy source rebooting after a million years of dormancy. Much like this one, a solar flare with no sun beneath it, a magnetic cannon 10,000 times stronger than nature gave it any right to be. Both sides drew their weapons. I don't know which fired first, or even if it mattered. How many tons of antimatter would it take to match something that could squeeze the power of a sun from a gas ball barely wider than Jupiter? Was Rorschach also resigned to defeat? Had each side opted for a kamikaze strike on the other? I don't know. Big Ben got in the way just minutes before the explosion. That's probably why I'm still alive. Ben stood between me and that burning light like a coin held against the sun. Theseus sent everything it could until the last microsecond. Every recorded moment of hand-to-hand combat, every last countdown, every last soul. All the moves and all the vectors. I have that telemetry. I can break it down into any number of shapes, continuous or discrete. I can transform the topology, rotate it and compress it, and serve it up in dialects that any ally might be able to use. Perhaps Sarasti was right. Perhaps some of it is vital. I don't know what any of it means. Charybdis. Species used to go extinct. Now they go on hiatus. Deborah McLennan, Tables of Our Reconstruction. You poor guy, Chelsea said as we went our separate ways. Sometimes I don't think you'll ever be lonely. At the time I wondered why she sounded so sad. Now I only wish she'd been right. I know this hasn't been a seamless narrative. I've had to shatter the story and string its fragments out along a death lasting decades. I live for only an hour of every 10,000 now, you see. I wish I didn't have to. If only I could sleep the whole way back, avoid the agony of these brief time-lapsed resurrections. If only I wouldn't die in my sleep if I tried. But living bodies glitter with a lifetime's accumulation of embedded radioisotopes, brilliant little shards that degrade cellular machinery at the molecular level. It's not usually a problem. Living cells repair the damage as fast as it occurs. But my undead ones let those errors accumulate over time, and the journey home takes so much longer than the trip out. I lie in stasis and corrode. So the onboard kickstarts me every now and then to give my flesh the chance to stitch itself back together. Occasionally it talks to me, recites system stats, updates me on any chatter from back home. Mostly, though, it leaves me alone with my thoughts and the machinery ticking away where my left hemisphere used to be. So I talk to myself, dictate history and opinion from real hemisphere to synthetic one. Bright, brief moments of awareness, long years of oblivious decay between. Maybe the whole exercise is pointless from the start. Maybe no one's even listening. It doesn't matter. This is what I do. So there you have it, a memoir told from meat to machinery, a tale told to myself for lack of someone else to take an interest. Anyone with half a brain could tell it. I got a letter from Dad today. General delivery, he called it. I think that was a joke, in deference to my lack of known address. He just threw it omnidirectionally into the ether and hoped it would wash over me wherever I was. It's been almost 14 years now. You lose track of such things out here. Helen's dead. Heaven malfunctioned, apparently. Or was sabotaged. Maybe the realists finally pulled it off. I doubt it, though. Dad seemed to think someone else was responsible. He didn't offer up any details. Maybe he didn't know any. He spoke uneasily of increasing unrest back home. Maybe someone leaked my communiques about Rorschach. Maybe people drew the obvious conclusion when our postcards stopped arriving. They don't know how the story ended. The lack of closure must be driving them crazy. But I got the sense there was something else, something my father didn't dare speak aloud. Maybe it's just my imagination. I thought he even sounded troubled by the news that the birth rate was rising again, which should be cause for celebration after a generation in decline. If my Chinese room was still in proper working order, I'd know. I'd be able to parse it down to the punctuation. But Saresti battered my tools and left them barely functional. I'm as blind now as any baseline. All I have is uncertainty and suspicion and the creeping dread that even with my best tricks and tatters, I might be reading him right. I think he's warning me to stay away. He also said he loved me. He said he missed Helen, that she was sorry for something she did before I was born, some indulgence or omission that carried developmental consequences. He rambled. I don't know what he was talking about. So much power my father must have had to be able to authorize such a broadcast and yet waste so much of it on feelings. Oh God, how I treasure it. I treasure every word. I fall along an endless, futile parabola, all gravity and inertia. Charybdis couldn't reacquire the antimatter stream. Icarus has either been knocked out of alignment or shut off entirely. I suppose I could radio ahead and ask, but there's no hurry. I'm still a long way out. It will be years before I even leave the comets behind. Besides, I'm not sure I want anyone to know where I am. Charybdis doesn't bother with evasive maneuvers. There'd be no point even if it had the fuel to spare, even if the enemy's still out there somewhere. It's not as though they don't know where Earth is. But I'm pretty sure the scramblers went up along with my own kin. They played well, I admit it freely, or maybe they just got lucky. An accidental hiccup tickles Bates's grunt into firing on an unarmed scrambler. Weeks later, Stretch and Clench use that body in the course of their escape. Electricity and magnetism stir random neurons in Susan's head. Farther down the timeline, a whole new persona erupts to take control, to send Theseus diving into Rorschach's waiting arms. Blind, stupid, random chance. Maybe that's all it was. But I don't think so. Too many lucky coincidences. I think Rorschach made its own luck, planted and watered that new persona right under our noses, safely hidden, but for the merest trace of elevated oxytocin behind all the lesions and tumors sown in Susan's head. I think it looked ahead and saw the uses to which a decoy might be put. I think it sacrificed a little piece of itself in furtherance of that end and made it look like an accident. Blind, maybe, but not luck. Foresight. Brilliant moves. And subtle. Not that most of us even knew the rules of the game, of course. We were just pawns, really. Saresti and the captain, whatever hybridized intelligence those two formed, they were the real players. Looking back, I can see a few of their moves, too. I see Theseus hearing the scramblers tap back and forth in their cages. I see her tweak the volume on the gang's feed so that Susan hears it as well and thinks the discovery her own. If I squint hard enough, I even glimpsed Theseus offering us up in sacrifice, deliberately provoking Rorschach to retaliation with that final approach. Saresti was always enamored of data, especially when it had tactical significance. What better way to assess one's enemy than to observe it in combat? They never told us, of course. We were happier that way. We disliked orders from machines. Not that we were all that crazy about taking them from a vampire. And now the game is over, and a single pawn stands on that scorched board, and its face is human after all. If the scramblers follow the rules that a few generations of game theorists have laid out for them, they won't be back. Even if they are, I suspect it won't make any difference. Because by then, there won't be any basis for conflict. I've been listening to the radio during these intermittent awakenings. It's been generations since we buried the broadcast age in tight beams and fiber op, but we never completely stopped sowing EM throughout the heavens. Earth, Mars, and Luna conduct their interplanetary trialogue in a million overlapping voices. Every ship cruising the void speaks in all directions at once. The O'Neills and the asteroids never stopped singing. The Fireflies might never have found us if they had. I've heard those songs changing over time, a fast-forward time-lapse into oblivion. Now it's mostly traffic control and telemetry. Every now and then I still hear a burst of pure voice, tight with tension, just short of outright panic more often than not. Some sort of pursuit in progress, a ship making the plunge into deep space, other ships in dispassionate pursuit. The fugitives never seem to get very far before their signals are cut off. I can't remember the last time I heard music, but I hear something like it sometimes, eerie and discordant, full of familiar clicks and pops. My brainstem doesn't like it. It scares my brainstem to death. I remember my whole generation abandoning the real world for a bootstrapped afterlife. I remember someone saying, "Vampires don't go to heaven. They see the pixels." Sometimes I wonder how I'd feel, brought back from the peace of the grave to toil at the pleasure of simple-minded creatures who had once been no more than protein.
I wonder how I'd feel if my disability had been used to keep me leashed
and denied my rightful place in the world. And then I wonder what it would be like to feel nothing at all, to be an utterly rational, predatory creature with meat putting itself so eagerly to sleep on all sides. I can't miss Yuka Saresti. God knows I try every time I come online. He saved my life. He humanized me. I'll always owe him for that. However long I live, and for however long I live, I'll never stop hating him for the same reason. In some sick, surrealistic way, I had more in common with Saresti than I did with any human. But I just don't have it in me. He was a predator, and I was prey, and it's not in the nature of the lamb to mourn the lion. Though he died for our sins, I cannot miss Yuka Saresti. I can empathize with him, though. At long last, I can empathize with Saresti, with all his extinct kind. Because we humans were never meant to inherit the Earth. Vampires were. They must have been sentient to some degree, but that semi-aware dream state would have been a rudimentary thing next to our own self-obsession. They were weeding it out. It was just a phase. They were on their way. The thing is, humans can look at crosses without going into convulsions. That's evolution for you. One stupid linked mutation and the whole natural order falls apart. Intelligence and self-awareness stuck in counterproductive lockstep for 500,000 years. I think I know what's happening back on Earth, and though some might call it genocide, it isn't, really. We did it to ourselves. You can't blame predators for being predators. We were the ones who brought them back, after all. Why wouldn't they reclaim their birthright? Not genocide. just the righting of an ancient wrong. I've tried to take some comfort in that. It's difficult. Sometimes it seems as though my whole life's been a struggle to reconnect, to regain whatever got lost when my parents killed their only child. Out in the Ort, I finally won that struggle. Thanks to a vampire and a boatload of freaks and an invading alien horde, I'm human again. Maybe the last human. By the time I get home, I could be the only sentient being in the universe. If I'm even that much. Because I don't know if there is such a thing as a reliable narrator. And Cunningham said, zombies would be pretty good at faking it. So I can't really tell you, one way or the other. You'll just have to imagine. Your Ciri Keaton.
The End. You've been listening to Blindsight by Peter Watts, narrated by T. Ryder Smith and directed by George Davis. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Sci-Fi Audio recommends The Accidental Time Machine by Joe Haldeman, narrated by Kevin R. Free. Grad school dropout Matt Fuller is toiling as a lowly research assistant at MIT when a serendipitous discovery convinces him that he's discovered how to travel through time. Finding he has nothing to lose, he borrows an old car, stocks it up with food and water, and winds up in the near future, under arrest for the murder of the car's original owner, who dropped dead after seeing Matt disappear before his eyes. The only way to beat the rap is to keep time traveling until he finds a place in time safe enough to stop for good. But such a place may not exist. You'll find a wide selection of titles in the Recorded Books catalog, including bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. Call us toll-free or log on to www.recordedbooks.com to learn about our latest releases and special offers, order another recorded book, or to read author interviews and narrator profiles. Don't forget to ask about easy 30-day rentals by mail. And thank you for being a recorded book